Hi, I'm Aislinn Antrim with Pharmacy Times, and you're listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition, where we break down the latest news in the oncology pharmacy space. Pharmacy Times covered the American Society of Clinical Oncology Conference live in Chicago from June 2nd through 6th. So this month, we're bringing you a recap of the key topics and data from ASCO 2022. First up, Bruce Feinberg, Vice President and Chief Medical Officer at Cardinal Health Specialty Solutions, discussed the growing role of circulating tumor DNA in colorectal cancer, and what steps could be taken to make this utilization more widespread throughout oncology.
So this is going to be something we'll likely be trending over time, and this is not unusual for our research. And so we will, there's just a certain learning curve and a certain amount of time that it takes for new science to get fully adopted. And often in that first wave of data, there's a little bit of hesitancy. Is there enough data? Do I need to see a confirmatory study? Was the study performed large enough? Do I want to see it in a different tumor type? And so there will be physicians who will be early adopters and understand the science and want to start using it. And there will be physicians who will be a little bit on the fence. And there'll be physicians who will say, this is not ready for prime time. It's fascinating. You know, come back to me in 10 years and we'll see. And we saw some of that. I would say that we saw the 50% maybe in a more favorable light. So we saw the glass half full, not half empty, that given the fact it really is a single tumor type that's, although the research is much broader, but one that's come into the mainstream with a large, well-defined trial in which multiple experts in the field have weighed in, we thought that that speaks favorably to the recognition that this is something which could move forward and move forward quickly. I still, you know, think it could be 5 to 10 years for it really to replace more traditional ways of assessing treatment response. I think we're going to see it sooner in blood malignancies, multiple myeloma in particular. But even now that we're using it in areas like blood-based cancers, like multiple myeloma, there still is hesitancy to base the full decision-making on the result. And we're still doing the traditional processes in addition to that test. But there always is a point of transition, and I think we're well on our way now because the science is there, the science has been validated. It's just going to take a little bit of time to kind of move that needle where we'll have the full adoption.
Pharmacy Times also spoke with Amila Patel, Chief Clinical Officer at Navigating Cancer, about digital health solutions in oncology and obstacles to their mass implementation.
Yeah, so oncology patients are quite complex and they require kind of multiple touch points over their cancer journey and engage with lots of different members of the healthcare team to get appropriate care. In oncology specifically, we've seen how these tools can help reduce ED visits and hospitalizations as well as keep patients on their treatment longer. But not all of these touch points with the care team need to happen through a clinic visit or even over the phone. By using these tools, we can start to really shift the care for patients to more of an at-home care delivery. So for example, if a patient is having some fatigue, they can report remotely through a mobile device to their care team that they're having that mild fatigue and get an immediate review and intervention from a member of the clinic staff. And they can, you know, go ahead and provide them with digital instructions for how to manage that fatigue, all from the comfort of their home. I really think that over the last 2 years, we've all collectively empathized with the ability to, be at home with our loved ones and how much that has meant for our well-being. And I think, you know, cancer patients are no different. So first, on the patient side, there are a number of barriers that have to be taken into consideration, including, you know, their technology literacy, whether they have access to broadband internet, the right devices to be used, their language preferences, all of those kind of socio-demographic factors and social determinants of health certainly play into patients' ability to adopt these solutions. And then on the provider side, the process can be quite resource intensive and requires a significant commitment from the clinical staff and leadership within the clinics to adopt these solutions.
Pharmacists can be vital team members when it comes to clinical trial enrollment, according to Beth Koselke, senior clinical pharmacist at the U.S. Oncology Network. Koselke presented research at ASCO on the impact of pharmacist intervention in the MyLung Consortium.
Yeah, so I think that's actually a really underutilized portion of what pharmacists do. Typically, pharmacists historically have really been in the investigational drug setting where we make sure that patients get the right investigational drug once patients are enrolled onto studies. But I think that pharmacists can really be brought out to the front of screening patients for trials because we're already looking at patients for appropriate drugs and disease state. We can include inclusion and exclusion criteria into that to screen patients for trials up front, maybe when physicians are too overwhelmed and aren't really thinking about clinical trial enrollment for patients. We're just like another set of eyes that can assist with that. We found that we nearly doubled enrollment rates across the six practice sites that we were involved with. So we went from an average of 3.4 patients enrolled per month up to 6.6 patients enrolled per month. Across every single practice site that we touched, we saw improvement. So I think that's pretty exciting and shows that a pharmacist can be embedded into community oncology remotely and across an entire network.
CAR T therapies were a major topic at ASCO 2022. Presenter Yi Lin spoke with Pharmacy Times about her presentation on new CAR T therapies and how they are changing the treatment landscape for multiple myeloma.
As of about this time last year, March 2021, we have the first FDA-approved CAR T to treat patients with relapsed refractory multiple myeloma. And by the end of February this year, we have a second CAR T also approved. So both products are approved for myeloma patients who's had four prior lines of treatment and had been treated with really the three major backbones of myeloma treatment, which is a proteasome inhibitor, an immunomodulatory drug or IMiD, and a CD38 antibody. So that's the approved indication. And then of course we have lots of clinical trials looking at both the approved CAR-Ts in earlier line setting, including frontline, and then other innovative CAR-T strategies. I think multiple myeloma is a disease that do respond well to immune-based treatment. And that's proven by the fact that, as I mentioned, the backbone of the treatment includes an immunomodulatory drug and monoclonal antibody that's really used from first-line treatment all the way through relapse refractory settings. So CAR-T is very exciting as another platform or modality of treatment, if you will, that's really using patients' own immune cells and using it as a one-time treatment, the way it's approved right now, as a way to gain remission in treatment. And so I think the opportunity for CAR-T is how can we work with this living drug, if you will, to continue to prolong the remission, maybe to start to think about the word cure, while minimizing some of the side effects that we can see with other types of treatments.
Have you listened to the array of other podcasts from Pharmacy Focus? We have content for every specialty, including retail pharmacists, technicians, students, and more. In the latest episode of Psychedelic Pharmacy, I spoke with Jim Gilligan of Trip Therapeutics to learn about the use of psilocybin-assisted therapy for binge eating disorder. Listen now at pharmacytimes.com or wherever you get your podcasts. ASCO 2022 also featured data from many clinical trials. Ahmed Kotib, Vice President of U.S. Medical Affairs for Oncology at AbbVie, discussed current treatment approaches for myelofibrosis and how new findings from the REFINE trial of navitoclax could change these approaches.
So myelofibrosis is a rare hematological malignancy. It happens when a gene is mutated in stem cells of patients. And what that happens is it leads to fibrosis of the bone marrow, and patients start suffering from decreased production of essential blood cells, so anemia, fatigue, pain. Unfortunately, over the last decades, there's not been much innovations happening in therapies for these patients. So patients are usually elderly when they're diagnosed, and they're classified either that they are eligible for a stem cell transplant or they're not, depending on comorbidities and to the degree their bone marrow is fibrosed. Majority of patients are not eligible for transplant. And so for those group of patients, unfortunately, there's only one mechanism of action that today is currently available, which is the JAK inhibitors. Ruxolitinib, for example, has been around for nearly a decade. And so that's why there's definitely a need for more advanced mechanisms of actions so that they can enable physicians and patients to advance the standards of care and potentially improve the outcomes for these patients. So navitoclax is a BCL-XL inhibitor. BCL-XL is one of the commonly expressed proteins in the cancer cells with myelofibrosis. And by doing that, navitoclax is able to induce cancer cell death. And so by doing that, you reverse almost the process of inflammation and cytokine release that happens in the bone marrow, which we believe will eventually lead to a reversal or modification of the disease. So it has a disease-modifying activity. What we see in our clinical program so far is that actually the bone marrow fibrosis decreases over time and with therapy with navitoclax.
Researcher Michael Dickinson also discussed step-up dosing with glofitamab and its potential use in non-Hodgkin lymphoma.
So glofitamab is a CD20-CD3 bispecific T-cell engaging antibody, which has a unique 2-to-1 format. It binds two CD20 molecules for one CD3 molecule. And what it does is it forms a physical bridge between T cells and the target, which is B cells, and in this case, lymphoma B cells. And that then leads to T cell activation, and the T cells then kill the target cells, which are the lymphoma B cells. And we've been doing a phase one first-in-human trial for a number of years now, and we've explored a range of B-cell histologies in that phase one trial. And we've presented different sets of data on those different histologies over the last couple of years. But the focus here at ASCO was to present the pivotal data in large B-cell lymphoma. And we included patients with diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, NOS, as well as high-grade B-cell lymphoma and primary mediastinal B-cell lymphoma, all in this pivotal data set. Patients had to have had at least two prior lines of therapy before they could be eligible for this particular clinical trial. And we give glofitamab for 12 cycles of treatment, so it's a fixed course treatment. And here at ASCO, we were able to present the results of that. And those results showed that we were able to achieve in this very difficult to treat population with highly refractory disease, a median of three prior lines of therapy, 80% who had been refractory to prior therapies, in fact 85% who had been refractory to prior therapies, we were able to achieve a complete remission rate of 39.4%, which is remarkable for a drug to do. And to put that in the context, you would have expected maybe optimistically a complete remission rate of around 15 to 20% with standard chemotherapies in that context. And so for a drug to do this, to be available off the shelf, for patients not to have to wait for that drug, for example, if they might have to wait for CAR T cells to be manufactured, to be able to achieve that complete remission rate is really very exciting for hematologists like me who treat patients with these aggressive lymphomas. And so I see this as being, a potential future option on the basis of this data for patients, really with, all patients with relapsed and refractory large B-cell lymphoma after two prior lines. I guess one of the questions that often comes up is, well, how durable are those remissions? And so the other piece of data that we were able to present today, at ASCO I should say, was that 80% of the patients roughly retain their complete remission at 12 months, even though they stopped treatment at 9 months. So we think that's going to translate to very durable remissions. And we were able to show a data set of patients treated at lower doses who'd had complete remissions where those responses had been maintained for years. And indeed, in my own practice, I have several patients who've been in complete remissions well beyond 3 years and into their fourth year after being exposed to glofitamab at much lower doses than the dose that we used in this pivotal data set. So that's all very exciting. It suggests that it will be a, a real drug that will really, I think, come into practice and be very useful and available for doctors and patients.
Finally, researcher Bradley Monk presented new results from the Athena Mono trial, investigating the use of rucaparib as maintenance treatment in patients with ovarian cancer.
It's my pleasure to discuss with you today Athena. Athena Mono, sometimes known as GOG 3020 or NGOT OV45, which is a randomized double-blind phase 3 trial evaluating rucaparib, a PARP inhibitor, as a monotherapy versus placebo as maintenance treatment following response to frontline-based chemotherapy in ovarian cancer. So the primary endpoint was met. The primary endpoint was met in the HRD population with a hazard ratio of 0.47, more than a doubling of the median. I get it that the median is only one point of the curve, but it helps contextualize the clinical benefit. 11.3 in the placebo arm, highly consistent with what you would expect, but 28.7 months in the rucaparib group. Again, this was in the HRD subset. The intent to treat analysis, it was still a hazard ratio of 0.52. And again, at the median, it was more than doubling, 9.2 to 20.2. Both results were statistically significant, but importantly, highly clinically relevant.
Thanks for listening to Pharmacy Focus Oncology Edition. If you're interested in learning more about any of these presentations at ASCO 2022, check out the Pharmacy Times website. Tune in next month to learn more about the newest developments in oncology.